Welcome to GVC Unplugged, a podcast made by employees for employees. Hear interviews and discussions with coworkers, stay informed about GVC news and projects, and catch up on the latest news and happenings at the co-op, and more. Let's get started.
Hey, GVEC team. Thanks for tuning in to the GVEC Unplugged podcast. You've got Carolyn Morrow here today with what should be a very interesting and informative episode. Today, I am very pleased to be joined by Nikki Herms. Nikki is a chemist who works in medical research and is also, I'm proud to say, my sister-in-law. Nikki is joining us from her home in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hello, Nikki.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, very good. It is such an honor to have you today. I'm so excited. And I wanted to just to take a minute so you could introduce yourself and share a little bit about your background and the industry that you work in so that everyone understands that we're not just having you on because you're my sister-in-law.
Right. Well, by education, I'm a chemist. And after college, I started working in the plastics industry, but realized I didn't really love it. So I moved into the diagnostic laboratory field, and that opened up the whole world of biochemistry, metabolic pathways. And for the last 16 years, I've worked for a diagnostic laboratory where my job is to delve into the medical literature and sort of boil it down for our clients who are doctors that don't have the time to do that, and boil it down and show what the research has done and what the research says. So from a career standpoint, I'm much more in the sort of biochemistry, looking at metabolic pathways and how does this nutrient affect this pathway in the cell and that kind of thing. But you can't really, you know, delve into that without really having an appreciation for food. And so the whole like learning about food and learning about health and wellness and really what that means, not from a purely medical standpoint, but just from a purely, you know, a practical standpoint. It has this whole scientific delving into the literature has spilled over into a total right. fascination with, you know, food and health and the American lifestyle and habits and everything.
Thank you so much, Nikki. Clearly, she is an expert in nutrition and health, and that is what the focus of today's podcast is, which we have titled Well, Well, Well. So without further ado, let's start off with some questions for Nikki so we can get right on track by understanding health, nutrition, and overall wellness from an expert.
Well, with the, you know, caveat that I really do come from sort of looking at things from the typical medical paradigm in America, which is a whole nother issue, but the typical, you know, medical paradigm is that health is basically managing things that happen over our lifetime, managing symptoms. If you have high blood pressure, you manage it. Or if you are overweight, you manage it. If you feel fatigued, you manage it. And that is what the, in the medical, you know, profession, and I don't mean to sound, you know, super cynical or whatever, but in the medical profession, it really is, health is about managing conditions that we accumulate over our lifetime, if you will, managing diabetes, et cetera. But really, that is not health. That is managing disease. And there is a huge difference between real health and managing disease. The thing is, we just have this paradigm of thinking of managing things, you know what I mean? As opposed to what real prevention is. You know, right. real prevention is a pretty radical idea. You know, the classic example of prevention would be like a smoker. If you're smoking cigarettes, it's pretty well established that smoking is contributed to lung cancer.
Correct.
And interestingly, you know, in the 60s, we as in the medical community and society did not believe that. We didn't believe smoking was linked to lung cancer. It took a lot of scientific sort of like, you know, marketing and everything to make that message clear. It seems like ludicrous now. Obviously, smoking is linked to cancer. That was not an established belief in the 60s when everybody was smoking. And what's interesting is real prevention is not smoking. That is actual prevention. But we think of things like, you know, lung cancer, we think of, you know, like managing it once you get it, you know, just smoke a little or whatever. And so the biggest misconception about health is really that health is managing diseases or symptoms. And that is not health. That is managing disease. disease is dis-ease. And so health is really like your body and your cells working exactly like they're intended to work. Most conditions are preventable. And that seems like, you know, kind of a basic statement, but it really isn't truly accepted in medicine. It's not accepted that diabetes and, you know, fatigue and cardiovascular disease is 100% preventable. It really is.
I think that you're right. I think a lot of people just consider that, oh, that's just part of my family history, my fate in life. But really, even though some people do have a predisposition for it, it can be prevented in most people.
Absolutely. Besides the fact that, you know, health is really a state of wellness, of vibrancy, of energy. And that's what our bodies are intended to be like, even into old age, you know, I mean, back into, you know, hundreds of years ago, people would like work the fields and then die. You know what I mean? Like they would be healthy until the day they died. In other words, they didn't kind of like nowadays, you know, you kind of in your 50s or 60s, you start getting kind of fatigued. Maybe you, you know, you start getting arthritis, you start, you know, having blood sugar dysregulation, and you sort of have this sort of decades long decline in your functional capacity. But really the body is intended to really be vibrant well into old age, 80s and 90s, you know, and that, so that's a misconception. People think you're supposed to kind of just gradually decline and get old or whatever. And the Americans particularly, but most industrialized countries, that is how we age, but that is not really how our bodies are truly designed.
Right. Absolutely. And I this is kind of segueing off that, because this is a discussion that you and I have had before, that studies have been done on countries that still do live off the land. And not only is their health better, but their dental needs are better. Their overall physical needs are better. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, first of all, I'm not saying, you know, go live in the woods, eat berries and, you know, kill your own game for dinner. I mean, I do want to bring this back to a practical aspect of, you know, living in America right now, but it is interesting when you look at, there's a very, very famous, Dr. Weston Price, who was actually a dentist in the 30s. And he went around the world to, he went to like 12 different cultures around the world. We're talking like cultures in Australia, Africa, Europe, some in South America, a couple in North America. We're talking really around the world. And he looked at people that were living off the land completely. And then, this was a lot, you know, a lot of European expansion was happening around the turn of the century. Then he looked at when the Europeans set up a trading post and they would trade three staples, coffee, sugar, and flour. And so these people that were living off the land in one generation started eating a lot of processed food. And he wrote this amazing book on it that's should really be taught in medical schools, some people argue, but he took pictures. And that's what's so fascinating is within one generation, these cultures, when they were living off the land, they had zero of these chronic diseases we see today. Heart disease, they didn't know what it was. Diabetes, completely unheard of. They were all fit and they were all healthy. Even childbirth wasn't that painful. Like their bone structure, they had wide bone structure and they had no dental cavities, none. And within them changing their food, the people started getting tooth decay. And then the next generation had crooked teeth, poorer bone structure. And it was a very, very telling study of how drastic food changes changed the body. Now, what's interesting is they were living perfectly, eating perfectly clean, which is hard to find, you know, yeah, in this day and age. And then they were changed to a very refined diet, like automatically. So it was a real interesting, you wouldn't see that happen now. The shift is much less dramatic, you know, nowadays, but he took these pictures and it was really revolutionary.
That would be a fascinating book. What was the name of that book again, Nikki?
It's Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. It was printed in like the 30s. It's a really interesting book. But what's interesting is of all these cultures, they had very different food sources. So some of them lived by the ocean. They ate like fish. And if they were tropical, they, you know, mangoes and bananas, whatever grew, you know. Some of them, like the North American, he studied North American Indians in Canada. They had almost no fruits and vegetables in their diet. They had cranberries, which are native to North America, some sweet potatoes, and mostly game. And so they lived off of like game and some cranberries. One of them in Ireland or somewhere, maybe it was Scotland, they lived off of oats, like raw oats that were grown and mm-hmm. fish. And so they were very different diets, but yet they were all very healthy because they were eating unrefined food, regardless wow. of whether it was very high animal or more protein, I mean, more vegetable or animal, it was just unrefined.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really interesting. And that kind of segues into, you know, a discussion of just about knowing and being understanding our food nowadays.
Right, right. So, and that really does get to the question of what can we do today?
The beauty is today you don't have to, like I said, you know, you don't really have to live off the land. You can go to the store and get vegetables and fruits and stuff. But of course, you also go to the store and you're just bombarded with all these, you know, different foods and different ingredients. And really, it really comes down to sort of, you know, we're very disconnected from what we're eating. Most people don't really know what they're eating or what it does to them metabolically and physiologically, because food is so processed now, you know.
Right.
Like I said, the beauty is, though, you can still go to the store and get unprocessed food. It's available, you know, but it's certainly not as convenient sometimes. I guess my message would be it's important to learn what our food has become, because our food is very much a source of the chronic diseases we see today. Things like autoimmune diseases, you know, people have, maybe they have thyroid problems. There's a lot of thyroid problems we see in medicine. You don't always connect that to food. They're absolutely connected to food, you know, arthritis and things that you see a lot of, you know, children might have eczema and things like that. They're often, in most cases, connected to food. We just don't traditionally think of those
right.
kind of, not all disease is connected to food, just the classic diabetes, you know, overweight, cardiovascular disease, but most things are.
Yeah, I know my daughter, she suffers with, you know, skin irritation and whatnot when she has gluten. So definitely mm-hmm. an intolerance mm-hmm. there. And as soon as she stops, things clear up. It
certainly, you know, gluten is a whole another podcast or whatever, but really just, you know, being aware of certain things that are in our food. And I'm not saying become a detective or whatever. I'm just saying, you know, learn just some basic things about our food supply. It's a little scary. It's kind of like the more you learn, the more you wish you didn't know, you know, but, you know, it can become overwhelming, but really the thing is it becomes, empowering as well.
Yeah. We were talking about that before we started the podcast. And we were discussing the relationship that a lot of people have with food is not necessarily for what it's intended. It's more of comfort or stress eating, or it's, and so the relationship is off.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a whole emotional aspect. Although I do want to suggest that, you know, I think a lot of people, you know, sort of feel like, I don't want to hear a lecture on don't, you know, stress eat, or I don't want to hear, you know, don't look to food when you're bored. Really, the thing is, food can be such a source of pleasure. I love food, and I don't want people to think that I'm just eating like lentils and wild salmon all day. You know, I love food. And if I'm going to indulge, I'm going to indulge, which I do often, I'm going to indulge in real food, like something with real fat. And, you know, if I'm going to eat sugar, it's going to be actual sugar. It's not going to be some weirded out form of sugar like corn syrup. I mean, I do love good, real, full flavored food. I think food is a source of pleasure. And to say that, to not use food as a source of pleasure is just the wrong approach. Just learning about food. And really, it's like when you are connected to your food, you do enjoy it immensely.
Right.
You know?
Oh, I totally agree. And I've been to your house and we eat very well. I know that. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, carbs, counting carbs or protein diets, or even more fad diets like keto or Whole30.
The thing is, there's always some good things about each diet and some bad things. I definitely don't subscribe to one or the other. I guess if there was one thing I would say is be aware of what's in your food. And I don't mean necessarily chemicals. I just mean ingredients. You know, I mean, like if you understand what your food actually is, that would be enough. I absolutely do not count carbs, fat, protein, or calories. Absolutely. That is a waste of time. When I see diets that say like have 20% in carbs and 40% in fat, whatever. I'm like, who, that is so unrealistic. Like who even, and then we're like, oh, there's an app for that. Okay. I do not want to sit down to a meal and do a calculation. I want to enjoy a big creamy soup. I totally think that that is a, in my opinion, a counterproductive approach to be quantifying stuff. It's very much like in medicine, how nutritional studies have a very reductionist view where they're like, we take one nutrient and we're going to see if you take this, how it affects your body. Well, everything, it's a holistic, you have to have a kind of a holistic kind of approach, because all of the body has all these metabolic pathways that are, you know, redundant and synergistic or whatever. It's just, you can't have that reductionist view of nutrition at the biochemical level. And I really don't think you really can at the macro level, like when you're eating dinner, you know? So if I was going to suggest like one thing is to, if you're going to look at a label, because I do look at labels, I just look at what the ingredients are. That's all. Just know what is in your food. With carbs, fats, and proteins, those are the three macronutrients, right? Some people say, you know, carbs are bad. Some people say too much protein's bad, can, you know, link to cancer or whatever. Here's the thing. There are good carbs, bad carbs, good fats, bad fats, good proteins, bad proteins. You right. can't just lump it into. And so what that means is you have to take a little bit of an effort to sort of, you can't just say, oh, there's fat, that's bad. You know what I mean? You have to understand, well, what kind of fat is it? Is this a natural fat? Like an avocado is filled with fat. Those are good fats. What about, you know, fat in a, you know, in a candy bar, that's hydrogenated fat. Even within the groups, some carbs, I mean, blueberries are carbs. They're delicious and they're great for you and they're a great snack. You can't just say carbs are bad or reduce your carbs. You know what right. I mean? And so when it comes to like the, you know, the keto, paleo, all that, there's certainly sometimes, I mean, sometimes it's fun to try them or whatever, but it's.
Well, and I think that sometimes people have success with those diets, maybe in the short yeah. term.
Well, and I'm all for that. Sometimes it's kind of a kickstart, like, okay, I'm going to reduce carbs for a few days, and it kind of kickstarts you, you know, and that just see it for what it is, but don't sort of like lump fats and as bad or carbs as bad.
Right.
Know what they are. Like if you've ever made homemade ice cream, you can't eat more than a cup because it's so filling. It is so rich.
Right.
That is how, you know, really rich food metabolically tells your body, you need to stop eating because I'm full, you know, and food with full fat and real sugar does that. Not that I'm saying promoting sugar or whatever, but I'm.
And I know that you guys make most things from scratch. I know that that's a big part of this too, is like you said, when you make homemade ice cream, it's different than what you buy in the store.
I mean, I haven't made homemade ice cream in a while. But I can tell you, I don't want to, you know, be under any misconception. We buy ice cream at the store, but we honestly, I'm very particular to one brand because they don't use corn syrup, Haagen-Dazs. They don't use any corn syrup, and they really only, if you read the ingredients, I know what they are. You know, it's
right.
usually cream, milk, sugar, and eggs or something like that. And then
yeah.
whatever, strawberries, if it's strawberry, whatever. And I can tell you, it's very rich. It feel, you know, it's not good for me by any means. I mean, it does have, it's loaded with sugar and you know, and pasteurized dairy, but it does make a difference knowing that it doesn't have, for example, high fructose corn syrup, which is in a lot of ice creams, because high fructose corn syrup is metabolically deadly. And here's just another little aside. There used to be some commercials like 10 years ago, there was a change in the labeling laws that it had to say, you see like cane syrup or corn syrup sometimes as an ingredient. Cane syrup comes from sugar cane and corn syrup comes from corn. And by the way, corn syrup as a sweetener in foods was, corn syrup was developed because they needed a market for corn. They were making a lot of corn oil. They needed to create a market for some of these byproducts of foods. And, anyway, high fructose corn syrup is very, very sweet compared to sugar. But metabolically, what's interesting is your body, the hormones that respond to cues of satiety or making you feel full are turned off with high fructose corn syrup,
wow.
but with sugar, they're not. So for example, if you eat, let's say you, let's go back to the ice cream example. You're eating homemade ice cream, which like I'm saying, I'm not under no pretense am I saying I make all my ice cream. I'll go get some Haagen-Dazs, but Haagen-Dazs, it's real sugar. Okay. So, and I hate to brand drop or whatever, but anyway, you get ice cream, it's cream, sugar, really rich. You eat a pint of that, you are going to be like super full. usually. The thing is, corn syrup, when you eat that, you get this hormone called leptin that is released that says, I'm full, stop eating, whatever. If you drink your calories, like sodas have high fructose corn syrup, or like ice creams that have high fructose corn syrup, fructose does not initiate the metabolic cascade that releases leptin. It goes a different pathway because fructose is metabolized in the liver, whereas sugar is responds to insulin cues. So anyway, if you have high fructose corn syrup, it will not, it shuts down the hormonal cascade that tells you you're full. If you do this over a long time, you start not having those fullness cues. That's why you can drink, wow, like if you're used to drinking sodas that have high fructose corn syrup, you can drink like a ton of soda and not feel full, even right, though you have drank 2000 calories worth of soda. It's because high fructose corn syrup, because being full is a hormonal response. It is not how much is filling up your stomach. It really is a hormone response. And that becomes dysregulated when we start eating foods that were not intended to be metabolized by the human body. Sugar is still, it's funny that I'm almost promoting sugar. I'm not, I'm just saying at least your body recognizes sugar and can respond with it. Whereas there's other things like corn syrups and high fructose corn syrup, particularly, and other forms of sugar that even bypass that from a marketing standpoint, from a food company, that's golden, because then you just keep eating it, you know, and your satiety signals are turned off. And so that's what I'm saying. You don't have to learn all these metabolic pathways, but you need to understand, okay, if I get ice cream with sorbitol, is that sorbitol really going to change? I might lose weight, but it's not really metabolically good for me, which in the long term, that it won't last. High fructose corn syrup, it's the same thing, you know? And so that's what I'm saying, learning about what is in your food, then you can just choose food that's real and your body will eventually learn the signals.
Whenever we talk, I want to go to my pantry and just start throwing things out. That is, that's exactly my response to this.
One thing is that it's a lot easier to add something good to your diet than to remove something bad. So sometimes I say, because it's one of those where now you start learning about all this and you start learning all these ingredients. You're like, oh my gosh, it's so overwhelming. You go to the grocery store and have an anxiety attack because you're like, I can't eat anything except for this apple, you know? Well, just step back for a second and realize it is easier to add things. And when you start adding things that are healthy, your body, you start getting nutrients that help your body get back to understanding what it needs, you know? So instead of thinking, okay, I'm not going to eat this ingredient. Although if you decided I'm not going to eat any high fructose corn syrup in 2021, that would be a life-changing probably resolution.
Wow.
But difficult because you'd have to look at everything, look at the ingredients of everything you eat. But if a simpler way might be add something. What is something that you feel like you're not getting? You know, do you eat leafy greens? Most people don't. Just add a cup of leafy greens a day. You'd be amazed. Like, really? That's so, first of all, boring. Or add a whole apple a day. And then just sort of add something good and focus on that, if you will, instead of feeling overwhelmed about all the stuff you have to remove.
That's really good advice. I like that a lot. So let's talk a little bit about vitamins and nutrients found in food. Can we get everything that we need as far as nutrients from our food?
Well, the simple answer is, ideally in a perfect world, if you're living off the land and eating totally unprocessed food, yes. But in reality, no. And that's okay, because the body has a lot of, like I said, it has a lot of redundancy. So if you don't get a nutrient, the body will compensate. The problem is, you know, in America, we really do live our whole lives eating a lot of, you know, foods that deplete nutrients. It's not just that we're not eating, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables and, you know, grass-fed meats and stuff like that. It's not that we're not eating those. It's that we may be eating things or a lot of medications. Most medications will deplete your nutrients. We're ingesting things that use up the nutrients. You know what I mean? And so it's kind of like, if I'm eating something, like ice cream or whatever, that I know is not really feeding me nutrients, it's not that it's just like sort of neutral. The only thing that's really would be neutral would be like water. My body is going to be using its metabolic nutritional reserves to metabolize things. That's even right. Even healthy food. I mean, let's say you eat an apple, you know, digestion is the number one source of oxidative stress in our bodies in many cases, because it's a very metabolically active process. And so even just digesting healthy foods, you are using up nutrients in order to do that. And so, you know, basically it's kind of like you want a bank of nutrition so that you remain healthy.
Gotcha.
Well, yeah. We're usually living, you know, on a deficit. So to say that we get nutrients from food, it's not, we really don't, although there are ways, I mean, there's ways to help that, you know.
So would you recommend taking a multivitamin?
That's kind of a loaded question. Okay, here's my answer. I can't recommend that without knowing the specific lifestyle of the person. And let me put it like, for example, there's a lot of people that take multivitamins thinking they're just basically giving them, you know, they're getting what they don't need. What they don't get from food, like it's their insurance policy. But first of all, most multivitamins are not, the ones you get off the shelf are very low dosages in most cases. They're often in forms that aren't absorbed. That's a whole nother very in-depth, you know, podcast about the forms of vitamins and basically you're throwing your money away. If you get a cheap multivitamin from a big box store or something like that, you're not absorbing most of it. And the studies are not equivocal on whether a multivitamin really does help chronic disease. If you're eating healthy and you're really vibrant, a multivitamin is probably going to help you. But if you're taking a multivitamin with the sort of false notion that it's going to like make up for the deficits mm-hmm. you have in your diet, that is totally not going to happen.
Right.
There's other things that you can do, just, you know, fasting and that kind of thing, that are very, very detoxifying for the body, very healthy, cheap, you know, not a lot of side effects, juicing, that kind of thing, that are probably more effective than a bad multivitamin. Right. It's still all about, I mean, in my opinion, real health really does have to stem from a quality diet, period. And you know, it can be overwhelming, but that is the case. If you want to live vibrantly, it's a necessity.
So one of the things that I know I found challenging, it's not so much anymore now that my kids are older, but when you have young children, when you want to eat healthy and you make this shift from processed foods to more nutritious foods, it can be hard to get the kids on board. Any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. It is hard. And, you know, I have three boys and, you know, if you put a cake in front of them, they're going to eat it. You know, we all do love the sweet stuff and the pizzas and stuff. The thing I've learned with them though, is at least with my own family, is number one, they need to be comfortable being different than everybody else. In other words, you know, everybody else is eating this. Everybody else has these, you know, this in their lunch. Why can't I eat it? You know, why do I have to, like, for example, my kids never had the school lunches. I always packed their lunch. Well, you know, why can't I have the lunch like everybody else? And you just have to accept no, because I want you to be healthy. Everybody in America has chronic disease. Half the people die of a heart attack. You know, that's the leading cause of death. And you just have to sort of understand that you will be different, you know, and that doesn't mean you go to a birthday party and don't eat the cake. But the thing is, like, for example, especially preschoolers, and it's really hard when they're young, you know, I live in Colorado. It's a relatively healthy state. My kids went to a preschool that was connected to a gym. And yet in their preschool, they had cupcakes like every week. It seemed it was like every time there was a birthday, someone bring in cupcakes or Easter or whatever. And there's always just like tons of candy and cupcakes in these tiny, you know, these kids that are like 4 and 5 years old. And, you know, I tried to say, hey, here's a list of foods that maybe you can say no, you know, have raisins or strawberries or whatever. And, you know, to no avail. And so I realized I just have to tell my kids, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to get used to making choices that are different than everybody else. And you can soften the blow a little bit by giving them, I would make their own little treat and have that, they'd have a treat at school that when everybody else is having cupcakes, they can have something else. And, you know, they would complain, but they realized, you know, now they're older and they're middle school and high school, they accept you, that's one thing, is you have to accept that you are going to be different than everybody else. And it's, so that's a huge sort of shift to make, you know, number one. Number two, what I've noticed with my kids is if I want them to learn to eat something, I have to put it in front of them probably 100 times before it's accepted, like as normal. And so like for 2021, my whole thing is I love salads. My husband loves salads. My kids, not so much. And so I'm going to just start having like a salad with one or two of our meals every week. And then maybe at the end of the year, suddenly they might just like salads. Like that's my thing. I love salads are so fun. I don't know why they don't like them. I just got to try different dressings, but I can't just make a salad, put it in front of their, you know, like this is dinner and they'll hem and haw, you know, but after doing that 100 times, they suddenly will like it. Like they've done that with avocados. Now they'll eat. I gave them avocados. It's like, here's, you know, avocado. Now it's like, that's their go-to.
Yeah, I know. When we were there, I noticed that William chose avocado over, what did we have that night? Lasagna or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah. And he's like, can I please just have this? And so it just, I think repetition of just putting it in front of them routinely, you know, like I said, I've always got like new things that I want to, like, I mean, this is maybe sound radical, but I think fermented kraut is really good at increasing your immunity with your gut flora. Okay, so and that's what I'm saying. Back to number one, the kids need to understand that they're different. Well, their mom is their that weird food mom. It's fine, you know. Now they're friends. All it's totally accepted or whatever. But for a while, I would put this tiny little tablespoon of kraut in a bowl by their dinner. You know, especially like if we were going out of town and I wanted whatever would boost their immune system. They hated it. Now one of them likes it. The other one will eat it. And then one still grimaces, you know, like it took a while. And fermented kraut, it's basically just sauerkraut, but it's real tart. It actually does. Me and my husband both like it. Cause maybe we're just our, you know, we're more accepting of new foods, but it, you know, I can't just put a bowl of kraut in front of a tiny tablespoon of kraut and say, here, enjoy it. But they get used to it. They really do. And they accept, okay, that, oh, mom's going to do kraut this week for a couple times, you know, whatever. So number one, accept that they're going to be different than their friends. And number two, just repetition and just keep trying. And then number three, I would say with kids, when we have dinner, we have one dinner, and if they don't eat it, they're hungry and you don't get anything else. You know what I mean? So right. I think, you know, I mean, that takes some habits to form and everything, but they can't, if they have the choice of eating something that they like that's unhealthy, they'll take that choice, you know? And so they just, you either eat this or you're going to be hungry. And it happens a few times and then they're like, okay, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, that over time that helps change things.
Well, I think that's good advice. Very good advice. I'm probably the parent that is more lenient on, and it's just my personality is, oh, you're hungry. Let me feed you. Sure. You can have that. So I need a little bit better discipline, I know, in my family.
Personality plays into it too. I have three kids that are very different personalities. And one of them is very driven by outside stimulus. You know, he's the type of kid that likes a thrill, you know, he's a dopamine seeker, if you would. And he likes to eat, when he's bored and out of pleasure, and it's just harder. It's like, I have to say, okay, are you really hungry? Just listen to your body for a second, you know? And the thing is, he'll eat good things. Like he'll sit and he'll eat a giant bowl of blueberries or whatever. And so I don't really come down on him. I'm like, that's fine. But I know that there's that whole connection to, I'm just bored. And if we had a house full of junk food, he would just go through it, you know? And so that's another thing is you can't have something that you don't want your kids to eat in the house. While if you're, you know, and you eat it, you have to live it too. When it comes to kids, you have to say, you know, I can eat this, but you can't. I mean, you all have to be on the same page.
Exactly.
I think.
So I think we'll wrap up our time by, I have one last question, and it's kind of just to get everybody on the same page of if there's one thing that we could start, if we wanted to start a healthy plan, what could we do today?
I would say probably learn, just read what the ingredients are in your food.
Gotcha.
If that's all it takes, you'll just kind of start being more aware of what you're buying. And, you know, you don't look at the numbers and the calories, all that. Just look at what are the ingredients and be familiar with that. And then in the produce section, you don't have to read any, you know, it's an apple is an apple, a lettuce is lettuce, you know? But everything else you're going to have to really look. I mean, you'd be surprised, you know, how much sugar and corn syrup is in a lot of these non-sweet foods, you know, ketchup and barbecue sauce and mayo and stuff like that, you know, don't think I got to cut it all out. Just learn what you're actually eating.
Well, Nikki, it's been great to talk to you. I've thoroughly enjoyed this, and I know that my coworkers that are in the room have enjoyed it. I see lots of head nodding. You can't see that. But they're enjoying it as well. And I know that you're going to be very well received at GVEC. So thank you so much for joining us this morning and sharing your wealth of knowledge.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
That about wraps it up for this amazing episode. Thank you to our special guest, Nikki Herms, for joining us today and sharing her wealth of knowledge. If you enjoyed listening into this episode and would like to hear more episodes like this, reply to the GVEC Unplugged podcast email to give us your feedback. The same goes if you have ideas on how we can make the podcast more interesting to you or would like to join us on an episode. We really want to hear from you. Be sure to subscribe to the GVEC Unplugged podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, or Overcast to be notified when new episodes are released. Take care of each other, GVEC team, and stay safe until next time.